This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Kyler. With Christian Aid Ministries, I have this opportunity to travel and speak in many, many different corners of the world and many different churches and communities. And I seldom get an introduction that's that good. So, these guys are good. And I appreciate the work of Reach. Some amazing things have been happening here. I've been tremendously encouraged and blessed by it. So my vision and goal here this afternoon is to help us understand how to keep going in spite of the incredible needs that exist around us. So I don't know who you are for sure. Some of you I recognize your faces, and I know some of what you're doing, and we'd love to do an introduction and be able to find out exactly what your situation is and all of that personally. But for me, it'll give you a little bit of an idea of where I come from, what I'm involved with Christian Aid Ministries. I've been there 26 years, like he mentioned, and my role has been public relations. So I've traveled throughout the United States visiting churches and communities. I've also done lots of international travel. So seeing needs is what I do all the time. I get regular emails of updates from the field. I get lots of stories and pictures. I go through pictures to put presentations together, to prepare presentations in churches. I read stories and I see a lot. I hear a lot. How do you keep going and without all of that just kind of creating a callus so that it's just another story, another crisis, another issue, a similar situation? How do you keep going? That's really where I'm at. And I want to talk about how to do that. Let me say first that I believe that Jesus was the perfect example of compassion. Or his compassion is perfect. And I'm so impressed with the way that he reached out to the lowest, to the neediest. Children especially. Have you ever noticed how Jesus related to children, pulling them in, drawing them in? You know, the disciples wanted to kind of keep them away. Don't bother him. He's too busy. But he was one who reached out, pulled them in, held them on his lap, stroked their cheeks, maybe? Bible doesn't say, but I picture Jesus really, really caring about the children and having compassion for them one after another. So as Christians, as his followers, what happens is we become filled with the Holy Spirit. That Spirit and power indwells us, and we become his feet, his hands to do his work and to show his compassion, I think. And so the last thing I want to do, and I'm sure it's the last thing you want to do, is come to a point where it all just kind of mushes together and we fail to see the real need and fail to reach out in compassion to people that really desperately need it. But we are imperfect, you know, and I'll say that from the start. We face issues and we are imperfect, and there are times when we become weary of what we see. There is fatigue that sets in. And I found it interesting that, you know, originally I was told by FB that this would be earlier in the day. This topic was supposed to take, somehow they saw fit to push it later. We understand fatigue, right? You guys are weary. So I know this, that one of the jobs I have, besides giving the presentation and making clear my thoughts to you, is to keep you awake in the process. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to work to do that. So I'll take that responsibility. Don't worry. But please help me out if you can and do your best to stay in tune with what's happening and at least act like you're with me. All right? So let me just start out with a story. I mentioned that I travel quite a bit. I meet a lot of people, and I really consider that a unique opportunity. But there was one situation here Not so long ago when I was gave a presentation, and at the end I was talking with this one person, and he came to me and he said, "Wow," he said, "your life must really be exciting." And I had to admit that, yeah, you know, it is actually. I really enjoy what I'm doing, and it is exciting. I'm excited to do the things that I do. And but, you know, and I'm sure you're there too, where you enjoy what you're doing. It's exciting where you are. But aren't there times when you get weary in the middle of it? It's the late nights, the long days, the phone call when you didn't want to have it, the crisis that came up at the last minute, that took you away from family, all of those kind of things that happen. And occasionally my wife and I, after a presentation, it's now 11 o'clock at night, we've just packed everything up from a church setting where we gave a presentation, we're settled in our van, we have a 3-hour drive home, that we say, you know, people really ought to see this yet too if they think our lives are exciting, right? So I'm not complaining. I'm not, because even those types of situations, I don't get weary of those kinds of things. I honestly enjoy what I'm doing. But, you know, there is the long drives, the long flights overseas in a crowded airplane with your knees up against, and I struggle with that more so than some. I always say people that make the rules on whether you can buy an upgraded seat with a little more leg room ought to be big people. Because if they're short, they don't care sitting in the back. But, you know, you try to fly 12 hours with your knees right up against the person in front of you, and it's another story. Time away from family. The thing that I worry about, and I don't worry, but the thing that concerns me the most often as I travel, and especially as I get older where I need my sleep, is just where am I going to have to lay my head tonight? Honestly, 20 years ago, it didn't bother me. I could sleep nearly anywhere. And missing a night on an overnight flight into Europe and on further east wasn't a big deal. I'm 61, and, you know, it's becoming more of a big deal. I'm still willing to do it, planning to leave Sunday afternoon for India. And I have a 14-hour flight going over. I think it's 15 or 16 coming back, so I'm flying direct. So I still do crazy things, and even that's exciting, honestly. I don't mind it. But sometimes it would be good if people could see some of what they think might be exciting in the process. I got 3 points today in the presentation, and my goal is, my hope is, to be done early enough with my part that I can leave it open and give you time to talk about where your struggle is, where you may be facing a situation, because your situation is different, surely, than mine. So we live in a world of incredible need. I want to just talk a little bit about that. I already mentioned the compassion of Jesus, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time there, but I want to highlight that, because there's something about the way that Jesus looked at people and had compassion that's unique. So I'm going to sideswipe that at least and talk about that. And then I want to talk a little bit about ways that we can avoid frustration and burnout. Now, I don't know how many of you sat in Richie Lauer's presentation on burnout. Anybody? Okay, a couple of you. So I'm going to go a little different direction with that. And honestly, after I was finished with Richie's, I wondered if I even understood burnout. So you'll have to help me with that when I get that to that point. Maybe I don't understand burnout. But just a couple comments on ways that we can keep going in spite of the struggles that we face. So we live in a world of incredible need, and in many ways it's getting worse. At least I feel that way, and I don't know, I don't even know why that is. And some of it is that we live in a world that's in many ways very small. You know, 25, 26 years ago when I started at CAM, we connected with people on the field through phone calls. If we wanted pictures and stories, they had to tell us over the phone, and we had to write it down, or we had to wait till they were home on furlough to get pictures, or open house to get pictures. And so it took time to get all of that information. Today, we live in an age and an era where we know what's going on real time, all the time, and we're blasted with constant pieces of news that come at us all the time. Our technology is good in that sense. I'm not sure that it's always a good thing. But we get an incredible amount of information, and I think that has added to this idea of overload and just finally getting to the point where it all kind of mushes together into one. And so when you hear stories, how do you how can you be touched by those stories? And I don't know, can we turn the lights off? This might be better if we just turn them, at least the front couple here. I don't, it's all or none maybe, and you can turn them all off as far as I'm concerned. That went in the closet, I think. That's good. That's fine. So there are incredible needs out there. And I'm going to just give you a couple stories, because stories always mean a lot. You know, somebody has said that a picture is worth 1,000 words. And I think that's partly true. I always say that a picture without words is like just having one shoe. Because you can create a story with any picture, right? But if you know the real story behind the picture, that's when it opens up the picture and that picture becomes real. So that doesn't look like too bad a picture, but let me just tell you the story. There's a woman in Palestine, Palestinian woman, some of our staff in Israel had opportunities to connect with. We heard that there was a mentally handicapped child in the family that needed some assistance, and we didn't know for sure what the situation was, how we could help. So our staff went to check out the situation and visited a bit with the family, looked around, but there wasn't any obvious signs of a need. And so they asked, so what is it? And this is typical of Middle Eastern culture. You don't go and say, so where's the child? We want to help. Here's the wheelchair. You know, that kind of thing. You wait. You talk through lots of things, drink tea. Maybe you build a relationship with somebody. And sometimes it takes many times going there until you really learn and understand the need. But eventually we found out there was a child in the basement of this house. And the way to get there was outside around, down a stairway. And our staff that went said as they went down into this dungeon, there was odor that hit them as they approached the stairway or the room. And here was this handicapped child sitting on a chair. The stench from the room was horrible because she had used the room for a bathroom and no one had cleaned up. And one leg is tied to a chair. And she's being kept in this room. So needs are real out there. They really are. And I'll just say this, that, you know, we get lots and lots of stories like this. This is not an isolated case by any stretch. So my goal, and I think and hope that yours would be too, to somehow step into the situation, somehow become a part, feel a part, sense the and feel the what these people really are experiencing. In order to be able to meet the need. And, you know, when we're finished here, you know, just to give someone like this a wheelchair, there's a greater need than just a wheelchair, obviously, in this situation. But that's one thing that we can do. Hopefully it's the beginning of a relationship with this family that we can take it a step further and improve the situation beyond that. So some of the biggest needs that exist in our world, materially now, I'm saying, are among elderly people, widows, handicapped people, and these are all people that Christian Aid makes an effort to help. Here's a widow in India. Widows in India almost never remarry. They're considered used, and the opportunity, chances of them ever remarrying are nearly zero. In fact, many years ago, the culture was that when a man died, he was burned. His body was burned. And at one point I was told that widows were actually thrown alive into the fire. More recently I heard that not only were they sometimes thrown alive, but they sometimes willingly jumped in the fire themselves as a way to end it, kind of committing suicide at the end of their lives, because beyond this, there was very little hope. Add to that the fact that Women marry very young. 13, 14 is not uncommon in the culture, often to much older men. And so they're widowed frequently at a very young age. This widow here has leprosy. And I've struggled to understand what leprosy really means in this culture. I hope till I'm finished with India by the end of next week that I'll know more about it. But as I understand that leprosy affects your feelings, your touch, so that if you have leprosy, you can't feel what you touch or can't sense when you've stubbed a toe or something like that. So what happens is a woman might touch something hot, not realize it, so her hand is burned severely before she realizes what she's actually done, and then doesn't take care of it because there's no sense of feel there. There's no pain. We don't appreciate pain like we ought to, that's for sure. And so what happens is eventually their fingers are worn off like this and their toes. So that creates very serious problems. Widows in India are among the worst humanitarian aid situations that are out there. These people are at the bottom. There's some very critical and very serious needs. And then you have children, not always orphaned, but often children who suffer tremendously because of rejection. Maybe they're orphaned. Maybe they're just pushed out. Maybe they're just unwanted. Maybe it's abuse that affects children like this. Often pretty seriously. And out there, there's a multitude of needs among the children, extremely innocent children, some very, very young, that face unbelievable situations. And then, of course, you have situations of malnutrition, serious starvation in remote places of the world like Liberia, Africa, Kenya, Yemen. Yemen is a part of the world where there's a real serious crisis, civil war that is separating ethnic groups of people. And in that crisis are people who have been killing each other, basically. And there's serious starvation there. It's considered one of the worst humanitarian aid crises in our world. And you have people like South Sudan, where they live like they did many, many years ago. Now, sometimes you see situations like this where you actually you see what appears like a crisis, potentially, and may very well be. But here you have people that have always lived like this. So they live off the land. They're shepherds. They have animals. So they have a fair amount of food, but they live extremely primitively. Now, for us, that creates a need, right? We look at that like this is a serious need. These people hardly ever wear clothes, so they don't need clothes. They live in a situation where they probably have at least a fair amount of food that they can survive, at least if they can make it to 4 or 5 years old. They've got a good shot at surviving. But still, these are very poor, certainly very poor situations. War has created an unbelievable amount of suffering in our world. Just very recently, some of our staff were in a camp, a tent camp in Iraq. And traveling with our people was a translator who was from Iraq, whose father was killed by ISIS in Iraq. Sometime earlier, I don't know the timing here, but a couple year or two maybe, I don't remember exactly. But they were visiting a family, and the mother and her daughter-in-law, I think it was, were telling the story of how the father joined ISIS and was fighting for ISIS. The son left his wife and also joined ISIS. The father was killed. The son was injured, came out, recuperated, and went back and was killed in the fighting also. And so pretty soon they're asking questions about, so where exactly was it in Iraq? And what happened actually was that this father and his son were fighting in an area where the translator's family lived. And his father was killed by ISIS. This family had ISIS members. Is it possible that this woman's husband killed this man's father? Entirely possible. And how does someone like that move forward and keep going? Widows in a place like Kenya live in extremely poor situations. This is among the Maasai people where the house is even barely tall enough for this widow to stand up in. So there's a lot of needs out there. And even this is just a small one, seems very insignificant. But as I was putting this together, this presentation together here a week or so ago, I got a message through WhatsApp and our SALT program saying that there was a situation in Nigeria. Some of our SALT staff were visiting there. And there was a bit of an uprising in the city. Some of our people were wanting to leave, headed for an airport. Maybe they couldn't get there. And so there was at least a temporary crisis where these people had to either wait, go to another city that maybe was going to take them 12 to 16 hours driving just to get there, to another airport, and that type of thing. And that seems very small and insignificant, and in the end nothing serious happened. They were able to get out, and it wasn't a big deal. It just was interesting to me that in the middle of putting together a presentation on this type of thing, this came up and became an issue. So I say all that to say that the world that we live in has got incredible need. This is not a new idea to you. I know you know that. And I've given you a few stories to give you some of what I face and some of the situations that I encounter. And honestly, as I listen to those stories and take those stories, some of which I've personally been involved in, and share stories of people that I've met, places I've been, or take stories that someone else has put together and pictures someone else has put together, and then turn around and present those needs somehow to people who are supporting the organization. How do I do it in such a way that I can say it in a meaningful way after 26 years, that I can communicate a need, an urgency, a crisis, a situation that's worthy of support and help? That's some of where I'm going with my presentation here today. And honestly, it's something I struggle with and have for a number of years, because it's very much a part of what I do. I get bombarded with this kind of thing day after day after day. I see it all the time. It's easy to kind of push it away a little bit and not let it become personal, not let each story touch me, not let each story really impact me the way that I think it should if I want to somehow present that need to other people. So how do we do it? How do we take it the next step then? It's really what I want to face here in the next couple minutes. And honestly, let me just say this, that I really want some of your input at the end here. I'm going to give you time to help me with this, because this is something that I need some help with. I don't have all the answers in this. Recently, after giving a presentation, someone came to me and said, There's something about the way that Jesus looked at people and the compassion that he had for people that we need. And I really agree with that. There's something about that. But even with that, how do you get there? How do you learn the compassion that Jesus has? And I read through several of the stories. One was in Mark chapter 10, verse 21, where Jesus looked at the man, and this was the rich young ruler, where Jesus said, "Sell everything that you have and take up my cross and follow me." And it says that he was sad. He went away grieved because he had many possessions. And Jesus said, "How shall they that are rich enter into the kingdom of And you remember the reaction of the disciples when he said that. Now, what the Bible says is that they were astonished. And did you ever see anyone who was really astonished? We seldom look at that and say, how did they really react? What it looked like when the disciples were astonished? Because we read it and kind of keep going, right? You know, so they were astonished. But how do you suppose they looked? Their mouths fell open. Like, what in the world? What did Jesus just say? How can that be possible? See, we don't often picture the reaction of the disciples in that way because we just smooth over things so quickly. But they recognize something unique here in what Jesus said to this person and in the compassion that he had for this person. Another situation was in Matthew 9, where it lists numerous healings of Jesus, saying that he went through all the cities and villages, teaching, preaching, and healing. He saw the crowds, and then it says that he had compassion because they fainted, they were scattered abroad like sheep without a shepherd. And it's there that he says the harvest is plenteous, but the laborers are few. So Jesus saw people fainting. He saw people physically in need. And there was something about that that he had compassion for. He reached out to the people in that time and wanted to help them. Another one is in Matthew 15. There's a great multitude that came there. There were lame, blind, dumb, maimed, many others. And they were cast at his feet. And he healed them all. He touched them, reached out to them, ministered to them all. And the multitude wondered. And Jesus calls in his disciples at that point. And they're hungry. And he says to them, he says, I have compassion. And I won't send them away without food. He reaches out to them in that way. And I'm intrigued that, you know, it wasn't just the spiritual need that touched Jesus in this situation. There was something about seeing the physical need. And as I looked at all of that, I concluded that I desperately need more of that Spirit of God, power of God that is working in my heart to be able to see the compassion and have the compassion for other people. And I think as I read through these stories of Jesus, I saw myself come so far short of having anything close to the compassion that Jesus has. And in my heart, there's a desperate plea to want more of that. And I trust that's your cry today, too, that somehow we desperately need more of that kind of compassion that Jesus had. How can we get it? Well, part of it is getting his Spirit, because once we get his Spirit, we have his power. Was it Collier that talked about the power? Who was in Collier's? Yep, a couple of you. Beautiful. When the power of God is, the Spirit of God gives us the power of God. And I sense in my own life a deeper need for this type of thing, that Spirit of God filling me to give me the power of God and the compassion of God as I reach out to others. But let me just finish out here with my part by just talking briefly about avoiding frustration and burnout. How to avoid it? What are some points? And I basically just have three concepts or three ideas I want to throw out. One of those is that we need to recognize that life for us here is, we are in a fallen world. We really, really are. The world around us has got a lot of problems. It's always going to have problems. Was it Deuteronomy? I think it's Deuteronomy 15 that talks about when you have the poor, this is what you should do. And at one point, the writer even says that once there are no more poor in the land, then you don't need to worry about this. And then he goes on to say after that, but the poor will never leave from the land or something to that effect. You'll always have the poor. In fact, I think Jesus, when he made that comment in when he was here, when he said, you're always going to have the poor with you, I think he was referring back there to Deuteronomy 15 because it says pretty much those very words. He really quoted it. So we need to recognize that we're in a fallen world. The world around us has got a lot of problems. It's always going to have problems. The other thing that I think we need to see is that we are not called to fix all of the problems in our world. You're not called to take care of every problem. I'm not called to fix every situation. There's only so much I can do. I'm limited. I'm only here for a limited time. I can only reach so far. I'm not going to be able to do it all as much as I'd love to. I'd love to fix the chaos that we have in our own country. I'd love to reach out into the Middle East and fix the crisis of the war. I'd love to somehow get into the hearts of the people in Yemen who are fighting and killing each other and helping them to see that what they're doing is really stupid. But I can't. I'm limited. There's only so far that I can go. I only have a certain amount of impact as I go. So I'm limited in what I can do. But the third point I want to make is that we can make a difference. You can make a difference. There is something that you can do. The last thing we need to do is say, the needs are so great, they're so vast, I can't do anything. Why even try? We try because there is something we can do. There is a work that God has called us to do. We can make a difference. You can make a difference. You can touch and impact people around you to make a difference. Your life will make a difference wherever you go and as you reach out. So, recognizing that we are in a fallen need, couple points here. While there is hope in Christ, we will always see the effects of sin around us. That's not a secret to you. We're always going to see the effects. Still, there is hope in Christ, and we're going to see the effects of sin. We keep plugging away. We keep doing what we can, impacting people where we can, but we're always going to have that, and we may not be discouraged by that that side of things. The other thing I think we need to recognize is that the situation in our world is really going to get worse. I think the scripture is clear with that. We're not in a world that's improving. It's getting worse. At the same time, you ought to do some study on what life was like under the Roman Empire, because we tend to feel that it's much, much worse today than it's ever been, and that just isn't true. The world has always been an extremely wicked and ungodly place, and if you, and not just the Roman Empire, but you go back to study history, I'm telling you, it's brutal. It's ugly. There's a lot of really, really ugly stuff that happened. Some of what we see, at least, pales compared to what has taken place. So do that sometime. But at the same time, I really think that the world around us is getting worse. Again, don't confuse that with thinking that we can't make a difference, because we can. As long as we are filled with the Spirit of God, we are the hands and feet of God, we have the power by the grace of God to impact the world around us. We can and will make a difference in the people that we connect with along the way. So we're not called to fix all of the problems in our world, just a couple ideas on that. God doesn't ask us to tackle the world. Okay, there's only so much you can do. There's only so far that you can reach. But he does ask you for your life. He does ask you for your life, and he wants you completely and totally. Was it Rick this morning that said what he needs is surrender? We need to be surrendered to the will and power of God. And what he needs in us is a humble, broken spirit that is willing to be used of God. Well, it's really a simple thing if you stop and think about it. The concept is really very simple. We can try to conjure up all the energy that we need to fix the things in our world, when it really boils down to a humble spirit that is broken and surrendered to the will of God. And when that happens, the power of God comes in so that we can really, truly do the things that God calls us to do. He wants us to do what we can with what we have. And then the third point simply is that we can make a difference where we are. Okay. And I want to just briefly go through this idea and give you a little bit of a story. And this is going to build on one of the speakers this last couple of days who asked the question, what is in your hand? I don't remember who it was. Somebody in one of the workshops spoke about Moses and when God came to him and said, what is in your hand? And I want to use a different story to give you a little bit of a glimpse into how a little made a huge impact in our world. How many of you have read Gary Miller's book, The Other Side of the Wall? I want to go through a story that he has in this book that I think is an extremely powerful story that lets every one of us, I don't care who you are. Well, yeah, I do care, sorry. But it doesn't matter who you are. God is able to use you regardless of your age, regardless of your background, regardless who you are. God is able to use you. And I'll just tell you a little story about what's her name? Catherine Williams. Catherine Williams, who lived in Mizoram, India, as a missionary. Now, Mizoram, India, is Far East India. It's that little tail of India that comes around between what is now Bangladesh and I think it's Myanmar. It used to be Burma, down in that little tail. If you followed the Rohingya crisis, it's right down in there where that crisis is today. But this was early 1900s, I think, when her and her family went over into that part of India as missionaries. Far East India, and they'd lived in, this should say undeveloped part of India, sorry. Very poor, very primitive, and again, imagine 100 years ago as a missionary family. But Catherine, as a young mother, her husband was a missionary pastor, she wanted to do something that could make a difference where she was. So what she started to do is to take, every time that she made a meal, she would just take a little scoop, a little handful of rice, and pull it off to the side and set it aside. Just a tiny handful, barely enough to make a difference for their family. And at the end of the week, she took this, and she would sell that little bit, and she used that, the money that she gained from that, to support an evangelist. And but as she continued to do that week after week, she had an influence on people around her. Now remember, they're living in extremely poor culture, almost nothing, very undeveloped part of the world. And but other women began to pick up on the concept, and pretty soon, here one, there another, began to take this idea and to do the same thing. And the congregation, through support of this evangelist, began to grow. Things began to happen. And the idea of what she was doing began to grow, and it became known as the handful of rice. Now, this started about 1910, and at the end of the first year, the total value of what she did in dollars at that time would have been equivalent to about $1.50. But this continued year after year after year until in 2010, the value that was coming from the same group of people in that corner of the world ended up being $1.5 million. Now, it's still a very poor part of India. But think about what has happened here. A little bit has been able to reach around and make a huge difference. And it has grown to include things like vegetables, firewood, and even cash, people being able to just give a little bit of what they have. They were using the little bit they had in their hands and were contributing it and making a difference. Items were then offered to the poor at a 50% discount. And the church itself has been growing now, and there's no need for someone from another country to come and help them. They're saving money themselves. They're supporting themselves. They're helping themselves, building their own church houses. Even from their group, they're sending out missionaries. There's no interest in this community in receiving any foreign aid. This is a self-help project that is built from a mother who said, let's just sideswipe a little bit of rice and set it aside at the end of the day. All with an average income of less than a dollar a day. It's a blessing of giving in the middle of deep poverty. Now, if this can be done in India, you know, just picture what something like this could be done anywhere in the world. This is a very, very primitive part of the world. And if it can be done there, it can be done nearly anywhere. Let me tell you a story about a widow in Romania. This is current. This is just in the last 6 weeks. So Romania is changing. Romania was once, barely considered third world, but certainly in a developing part of the world. And since it's part of the EU, there's a lot has changed in this country. But one of the things that hasn't changed is people living in remote parts of the country, especially in villages, are still right down there at the bottom where they've always been, a lot of poverty. Christian Aid has been sending out a magazine, a Christian family magazine, throughout the country. Several years ago, we started to include a little bit of information about some of the other projects that we're doing. And we're still sending food boxes to Romania, by the way, still sending clothing and medicines and other aid there, but we're getting more information out to the people. And what's happening is people are starting to send in money because they want to help a famine or a crisis in Africa or the refugees in Syria. Not a lot, but they want to help. They want to do a little something here or there. In 2018, contributions from the country of Romania are higher than any other country outside of the United States and Canada coming to Christian Aid Ministries. That's above Mexico, above Belize, And we're getting money from, 17 or 18 different countries outside of the U.S. And Romania is next to U.S. and Canada in contributions. And I don't remember the exact totals, but it's something over $100,000 a year is coming from Romania. But one story in this is a widow in Romania who heard about this, or her community heard about it, and her pastor wanted to do something because there was a need elsewhere. And so he began to speak to his congregation about this. And this widow came and said, I don't remember the amount of money. It was enough money that she had saved. I think it was $400, as I remember it. It was several hundred anyway. And what she wanted to give was, she wanted to give this money. She had saved it for her winter fuel. This was in January. December, last year already. And she had saved this money for her winter fuel. But her comment was, I believe God can take care of me. And so she was giving this money to Christian Aid Ministries to help in another project in another country, sacrificing her winter fuel. How many of you save for winter fuel? We do. My wife and I do. This is something we do. We put money away for winter fuel. This is incredible to me to see people like this make this kind of sacrifice and say, God will take care of us. God will help us in situations like that. I really think sometimes we are plenty self-centered in our own thinking. And maybe some way of avoiding burnout is to be more Christ-centered, less self-centered, I think. Some of you have seen this poem, and I just want to read this poem to you here at the end. This is, I'm sure some of you have seen this, but I've been intrigued with this. This is a poem that I first saw back in my kitchen cabinet days. I don't know why somebody had posted it on a bulletin board in our cabinet shop. When things go wrong, as they sometimes will, when the road you're trudging seems all uphill, when the funds are low and the debts are high and you want to smile, but you have to sigh, when care is pressing you down a bit, rest if you must, but don't quit. Life is queer with its twists and turns, as every one of us sometimes learns, and many a fellow turns about when he might have won had he stuck it out. Don't give up though the pace seems slow. You may succeed with another blow. Often the goal is nearer than it seems to a faint and faltering man. Often the struggler has given up when he might have captured the victor's cup. And he learned too late when the night came down how close he was to the golden crown. Success is failure turned inside out. The silver tint in the clouds of doubt. And you never can tell how close you are. It might be near when it seems afar. So stick to the fight when you're hardest hit. It's when things seem worst that you must not quit. Rest if you must, but don't quit. And we all need to rest. There's no question. All of us face times when we're up against and we need rest. So we talked about a world of incredible need, the compassion of Jesus, and ways that we can avoid frustration and burnout. And one of the things I want to say with that simply is that all of us have opportunities and ways that we can make a difference. And your situation is different than mine. I'm not here to tell you what to do. But I think if somehow we can place ourselves in the situation where others are and make an attempt to understand the struggle of others, I think it will help us. 2 points in closing here. There's hope for everyone in every situation, and you can make a difference. And just a comment here, we are at booth 13 in the ministry display area if you want to talk to us. So I don't know, what do we got? A minute and a half? Tyler, help me out. What are some things you'd like to add to this as we close here in the last minute or so? Anyone? What are ways where you face fatigue, overload, where it's hard to see opportunities that face you?
I think one of the main things that you brought out is that where's our focus?
Okay.
Too many times it's on me me.
We're focused on ourselves.
That's
also.
That's where most of my problems come from.
Yeah.
From myself.
Yeah.
So
good.
That's a good point. And
yeah.
The other point you made is that we can make a difference. I often think that the story of the little boy that's walking the beach and throwing
the starfish
into the back of the ocean. Someone said, "You're crazy. It's a waste of time."
Yeah.
Made a difference for that one.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to, we need to see the individual rather than the multitude in the situation. And it's because of that that every one of you can make a difference. You don't need to be a Billy Graham. You really don't. You have incredible opportunities where you are. Probably ought to close there. Thank you very much.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.